You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we'll talk to a co-author of the newly signed law in Wisconsin, the RAINS Act, which limits agencies' regulatory power.
First, if you're like a lot of people, work is a big part of your life. A lot of your day is spent on the job, and it takes up that mental, physical, and maybe even emotional energy.
Our next guest says, in a lot of cases, work takes up too much of our lives, not just in terms of time, but in the way it shapes our identity. And he says, we can be happier if we make sure that we care about other things more than we care about work.
Andrew Taggart joins us now. He's an author and practical philosopher with a PhD, by the way, from the UW-Madison. His piece on work is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Andrew, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, Rob.
Well, in that piece, you start with the concept that we live in an age of total work. What does that mean?
Total work is a concept that comes out of the writings of a lesser-known German philosopher named Joseph Pieper. And he argues, as I see it, that more and more work is becoming the center around which the modern world turns, while everything else in life comes more and more to resemble work.
And you write about how some examples of this might be that we try to stay healthy and be fit so that we can be more productive, and a good day might be defined by being a productive day, and that this is getting into this whole work mentality that just kind of permeates everything.
That's right. So one thesis is that work has become central. And another thesis is that everything else in life has come to be subordinate to or subservient to work. And I think a nice example here, and you could read it in the New York Times, perhaps, or in the Wall Street Journal, would be to say something like this. Well, why would you meditate? And the answer provided would be, well, I'd meditate in order to be more mentally calm or healthier. And then someone would say, well, why would you want to be more mentally calm or healthier? And the answer would be, well, because I'd like to be more productive at work. If you want, you can play that game with a lot of different questions and come to some fairly similar answers, namely pointing to work as being the end, the reason why you would do that.
How do you see that affecting our happiness, that we focus not just on work while we're at work, but everything else keeps leading to this idea of being more productive?
So a little bit of context is in order. I didn't come to be fascinated by work for its own sake. I came to be fascinated by the nature and structure of the modern world, the world we live in. And over the last 6+ years, I've had a number of philosophical conversations with people around the world, from Silicon Valley to Scandinavia, from Central America to Middle America. And I was surprised that people had never met each other before. We're starting to sound more and more like one another. And what they continue to say, very roughly speaking, is that their ideas and notions about work were causing them needless suffering. And that became very puzzling to me about why that was so and what could be done about it.
So suffering, that's a strong statement, not just that we're not happy, but that we're suffering. Why is this obsession with work making us suffer?
Well, I think there are a few different reasons. One is that I'm using it in a Buddhist key. So the word there is dukkha. And if we relax our use of the word suffering, we could come to a word such as unsatisfactoriness or restlessness or a feeling that things don't quite add up or a feeling of being stuck or a feeling as if I'm never quite done with things or through with things. That's the state that I'm trying to describe.
We're talking to practical philosopher Andrew Taggart about work and our lives and how work is taking over our lives in a lot of ways and even permeating our time away from work. We weigh our value and happiness by how productive we were, and he's hoping that we can start to change that. And Andrew, let's get into that a little bit. How can we make work a little bit less of a priority in our lives and start to focus on other things, maybe more fulfilling things?
That's a beautiful question. I think that there are a few different steps involved. The first is to think about the fact that we're human beings who care about things, and we care about things that we value or take to be important. So for reasons that would be very historical and might go beyond the bounds of our current discussion, we've come to take work to be extraordinarily important, extraordinarily crucial to or central to a life well lived. And so what I would first ask us to do is to begin to think about whether or not that's true. Is it really true that work is nearly as important as we think it is? And if we begin to look around at people who are very successful at work, we can begin to wonder whether their lives are as good as we thought they were, or whether there aren't actually things going on in their lives that would cause them some form of unsatisfactoriness, whether it's not being around their family, whether it's not being with friends, whether it's not being involved in religious celebrations, and so forth. Once we've begun to undertake serious questioning of the value and importance of work, then we can move on to some other steps. Namely, we can begin to think about things that would be perhaps more important than work and that would take us into art and, dare I say, philosophy or religion and spirituality. And we become involved in things that allow us to lose the sense of time around us and get lost in what it is that we're experiencing. And my proposal is that those kinds of experiences are the ones that I think are more enriching, more fulfilling, and above all, more meaningful.
Is that time sense a part of it? That it seems like when we're at work, we're basically on the clock. It's a metaphor, but it's also what happens in real life. We're watching the hours tick by. We're feeling crunched for time, that we're not going to get enough stuff done. So is losing sense of time and being maybe outside of time in a certain sense, is that important here?
It very much is. I think that if we were to treat time as if it were a literary figure, clock time rather, as a literary figure, then it would seem as if it were our enemy. That it's always against us. We're always behind it, and it's always pushing us onward. We're never really quite where we'd like to be. And so there are experiences that we've had, and no doubt we've all had them, in which that sense of clock time falls away. And we feel as if we lose track of clock time while we come to feel a kind of uplift or a sense that the world is beautiful and wondrous and even in some respects mysterious.
That's a hard instinct to fight, though, and we have the concept of wasting time, which in a way is a metaphor, but it can make it hard to, if you're doing something that doesn't get your work done or make the kitchen cleaner or whatever, it feels like you're frivolously wasting time. How do we start to overcome that sort of, I guess, psychological hurdle?
I think we need to imagine for a moment that the secular age has brought forth a few goods or a few ideas about what a good life is. And one is that work is central. And the other is that when we're not working, we would seek some form of pleasure. And so if we imagine that's a horizontal dimension or horizontal plane, we could then imagine ourselves looking up and seeing a vertical dimension or vertical plane. And the idea would be that, I think this is easiest, for example, for theists, for people who believe, they begin to actually see that their relationship with God is actually revealing to them that there are higher dimensions to reality, higher dimensions to life. So it wouldn't be the case that they would just not do the dishes or that they would cease the ordinary tasks of the day. It would rather be the case that they would just complete these tasks without getting hung up on them or caught up in them, so that they would have the non-clocked time ability to experience that vertical dimension to life. So my proposal is that we need to find some way of valuing something that is more than or above the ordinary calls and claims of work and pleasure.
You hear about the concept of flow and how when you are in flow, time is something you're not aware of. Hours can pass and it feels like minutes. If we're on the clock and it feels like a grind, does that maybe just mean that we're in the wrong line of work? If we were in a different line of work, we'd be in flow and it wouldn't necessarily feel like work.
That is a good question. And I've heard that often from people, namely that perhaps we just need to change lines of work And without a doubt, some forms of work would be better, period, or better for me than other forms of work. And I don't think that's disputable. But what I wonder whether, what I often hear from people with whom I have conversations is that they've tried that before. They've continued to move from one line of work to another line of work to a third line of work, thinking that the answers to life lie in meaningful work. And what I'm suggesting is that perhaps there is more to the philosophical inquiry than just finding a better or more suitable line of work than the one we're presently in. Maybe our ill at easedness, if we were to only listen to it, would carry us farther out of the dimension of work and into something else.
We're talking to practical philosopher Andrew Taggart. He says we can be happier with our work lives if we make them less of a priority and with all the other stuff that's going on in our lives.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Does work take up a lot of your mental space, even maybe when you're off the clock? Do you take time in your life to do things that are non-productive? How do you define who you are? Does it involve work or not? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up that conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and we continue our conversation about work and happiness with practical philosopher Andrew Taggart. He says we can be happier if we make work and productivity a less important part of our lives and define ourselves more by the non-work stuff that we do.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about your life here? Do you feel like you always need to be productive on and off the job? Does work dominate your day and your thinking? And how do you define yourself as a person? Is it what you do for a living, or is it something else? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Andrew, let's talk about that identity question, because you write that this ultimately comes down to who we are. I think a lot of us define ourselves in part by the work we do. In conversation, we might ask, what do you do? I guess Americans do this more than other people in the world. So how do we answer that question of who we are when we start to separate it from work?
That's a great question. Well, first of all, we can think about how we could answer the question, who am I? And you might say, well, I'm so-and-so's husband or wife, or I came from a particular place, or I came from a particular people, or I'm someone who comes from a particular country. And I would suggest that what's been really fascinating from a historical point of view is that we've begun to think it's common sense to answer the who am I question in terms of what sort of worker we are, or to update the terminology, what kind of career we have, or where we are in that career. And I would suggest that that's only a very small part of the story. When we begin to ask the question, who am I? And philosophers ask that question, Zen Buddhists ask that question. The question, who am I, begins to cause us to doubt that we're just workers, that maybe there's more to us, more to what it is to be human, perhaps more than what it is to have an identity, than what can be exhausted by or understood in terms of work. And so we begin to ask that question, we can come to possibly higher and higher levels of awareness with regard to that question, provided that we continue to keep up asking it. It's not an easy path to take necessarily, but I do think it's a really beautiful and fruitful one to take.
I want to go to our callers now. We've got Brad with us first in Mequon. Brad, hello.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I'd like to maybe offer a redefinition of productive. People say, well, did you do anything productive on your vacation? I said, yeah, what my wife and I did, we visited our family. It produced a lot of happiness, produced a lot of pleasure. We sat and watched the ocean, and that produced a lot of happiness. So productivity doesn't always have to be measured economically. And so I will say, yes, we were very productive, and we enjoyed watching the birds today.
So, I like that definition, Brad. Thanks a lot. What about redefining productivity, Andrew?
I'm happy with anything that, if we loosen the terms a bit, I'm happy with anything that brings us into leisure and play and festivity or celebration more often in our lives. So I'm very sympathetic to the idea that something that brings about joy in others would be particularly in family members or in community members. It was really a wonderful way to think about certain aspects of one's life.
Brad, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Dave in Cobb. Dave, hi.
Good afternoon to you. I'm kind of nearing retirement, and I'm wondering to myself, you hear about the guy who goes fishing every day, and after a while, a couple of years later, he passes away, you know. I was wondering, does he need to keep in touch with his fellow workers after retirement, or what would you suggest?
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. So in retirement, and I think this is a common problem, Andrew, if we've been defining ourselves by our work and our workplace, finding that meaning and finding an identity in the post-work world. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, it's a really wonderful thought. And I'm sympathetic to that view because my father retired young. And he has told my wife now and again that he feels as if in virtue of being unproductive or unuseful, that his life has no meaning. So it's a deeply relevant question today. What I would suggest is that part of the puzzle comes out of the fact that we're not really quite sure what words to use in virtue of the extent to which work has become total. So we think of things like hobbies or get-togethers, but I think we need a little bit thicker words in order to describe what it is we do and what we're about when we're with friends or community members. So I would suggest, for example, that being involved in charities would be one wonderful thing to do. I think that becoming a master of sorts at fishing rather than just taking it as a simple hobby is a beautiful way to take one's time with things. And I think, too, the reinvigoration of civil society, which we've largely lost, is a part of the answer. That is coming together in groups, in clubs of the sorts that my father grew up with when he was younger. So there are various ways of trying to build up a sense of friendship, of community, and of purpose that aren't necessarily tied specifically to work or to working.
And I love your list of suggestions that you can start with to take a first step to getting outside of time and thinking of life outside of work. One of them is lying down in a rowboat that's going nowhere, which sounds to me surprisingly appealing. I haven't done that. I think that came from a different source. Forest bathing is another one. What is it about those activities?
These are delightful activities that are... As Oscar Wilde would say, they're utterly useless. And I'm not using. I'm being a bit coy there, but I also mean it in earnest. To riff on Oscar Wilde. One example came from Jean-Jacques Rousseau, and he tells us that in this piece he writes that he rows out in the boat. So he does exert himself a bit. He rows out in the boat to the middle of the lake, a peaceful lake, and then he lies down in the lake and allows the boat to drift around him. And I think this is but one experience, which is reminiscent of stargazing. It's reminiscent of the kind of letting ourselves be that can come as a consequence of some kind of exertion. And it's these sorts of experiences that are contemplative. In the Latin, they're the vita contemplativa. They allow us to contemplate our relationship with the universe. And it just happens to have the effect that it makes us feel very calm, often very much at ease with where we are.
And ultimately, you mentioned this earlier, you're hoping people can start to be more philosophical. You're hoping that we can start to think of who we are and, as you were just saying, how we relate to the universe. How can we start to adopt this attitude of what you do, practical philosophy in our lives?
Well, a philosopher might say that he wants everyone to be more philosophical, so we may wish to take that with a grain of salt. But if we set aside my own bias, I think that what speaks in favor of our philosophizing or of being more philosophical is that quite frankly, in principle, we can all do it. That is, if we think of philosophy as an ongoing reflective activity concerned with asking and trying to answer more basic questions about human existence, about why we're here, about what it's all about, then I think at some point in our life, particularly if something bad has happened, it behooves us to ask that question. And what's wonderful about asking that question is that even if we don't come to an answer that's satisfactory or fully satisfactory, we come to a state of wonderment. And I think that that's a genuine state of wonderment. We really do feel the sense that something is awesome or wonderful. And that brings us away of brings us far away from our cares, our anxieties, the noisiness and disturbances and busyness that otherwise seem to occupy almost the entirety of our lives.
Well, that's a good place to leave it. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
That was Andrew Taggart. He's an author and a practical philosopher. He has a PhD, by the way, from the UW-Madison, so we welcomed him back to Wisconsin today. We have a piece on that he wrote on work. It would appear on Quartz.com. We've got a link to that over at the Central Time Facebook page, and you can share your thoughts while you're there. You're going to hit the rudderless rowboat this weekend?
It sounds really appealing, but one thing I have tried that he also mentioned we didn't talk about was a sensory deprivation tank. I got super stressed out a few months ago, and I tried this, and you know what? It's pretty great. And during this interview, I just kept thinking, I think I'm going to try that again.
You're going to go back into the tank.
Yeah.
I worry about being alone with my thoughts to that extent and no sensory. I think that idea of the forest or the boat might be a little safer. I don't know, like a little something to see and focus on outside of my head.
Worth a shot for sure.